Hello, Cleveland. Welcome to the Dogland Podcast. I am your host, Anthony Jokey. As always, got my co-host, Jackson McCurry, alongside me. Jack, I know it's been a few weeks, but how we doing?
I'm doing well, man. Obviously, you had a rough couple weeks. Well, with a week in between that we'll get to here in a minute, but I had a rough couple weeks as well, but good to sit down and talk with you, catch up on the Browns news. And Anthony, we are 9 days away from the NFL draft. Like, it is crazy. Like, we always say that the offseason is kind of slow, but then like free agency happened and then boom, like the draft's almost here already. It's insane.
Yeah, it's crazy how quickly it's kind of crept up on us. I think it's crept up more on me because I've just been so busy with everything else that's going on. And it's kind of nice to go from start of free agency, we got all that flurry of stuff, and now it's draft time. And, you know, this is the part that we really enjoy. You know, we've talked draft extensively on this podcast over the years and for very terrible reasons. But it's nice that we kind of sit back and get to, get to enjoy the draft a little bit. Shout out Alex, we love you. You know, it's nice that it is only 9 days away and we get to find out and really not have to worry too much, I think, about, you know, what's going to transpire. We just kind of get to sit back and relax and just let the 3 day process unfold.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I've been doing mock drafts over at Dogs by Nature since September. 8.0 will come out next Monday. I think it'll probably be my last one. I might squeeze out another one before on draft day. But yeah, I mean, with as talented as the Browns roster is, the minimal draft capital we have, and, you know, there's no suppressing needs. Like, we're not going into draft day worrying about X position or Y position. Like, we can go in, take best player available, set position groups for the future with those draft picks, adding depth and competition, but like, we don't have to worry about it. It's not the Super Bowl anymore, Anthony. We're actually competing for the real Super Bowl now. And like, and that's a good thing. Like, when we started this, the Browns had what, 3 first round picks in the 2017 draft. And now we're at the point where this is our third consecutive year not having a first round pick. So times have really changed in the history of the Browns and the history of this podcast. And it's good to sit back and, sorry, I'm about to do this, enjoy it.
You know, we really don't have to worry about X and Y position because we have Amari Cooper and Jerry Jeudy.
Aha.
Yeah, there you go.
That's a good one, man. That's a good one.
But yeah, you know, it's nice. And, you know, we're going to dive into your mock draft a little bit later on. And we have some other Browns news to discuss. But first, did you enjoy WrestleMania?
Oh, yeah. I said this right after the show. I didn't think anything would ever top 17 or even 30, because I think those are my two favorite WrestleManias of all time. But the two days from WrestleMania 40 last weekend, including the main event, blew it away. Like, WWE hit a grand slam in Philadelphia for what all they did that weekend. But WrestleMania was amazing top to bottom, and you got to enjoy it even better because you were in Philadelphia, Anthony. And I've been dying to ask you, because I know we both said we were talking about this on the pod. We were hopefully going to do it last week, but things happened. But how was Philadelphia? How was your experience going to WrestleMania? Because obviously some of us in Northeast Ohio can't wait for WWE to come to town this August for SummerSlam at Cleveland Browns Stadium. But you got to experience one of the best sporting events in the world going to both nights of WrestleMania. How was it for you as a fan?
Oh, first off, this has just been, it was an entire dream to go to WrestleMania. You know, I've watched wrestling since I was a little kid. And I spent a lot of time whenever I would visit with my grandfather, because when I grew up, he was living in Jersey. So whenever we would go, you know, I would sit there and watch wrestling with him. Got the privilege of one time going down to the queue to watch a Monday Night Raw with him. The New Day was like his favorite thing going on at the time. He just loved them. And You know, obviously, unfortunately, I can't watch Wrestling Grandpa anymore, but it's just something that I've always loved, and it's surreal that I decided to go to WrestleMania. I've never taken a solo trip in my life, and this was the first time I ever, you know, traveled on my own. And I decided, I'm like, well, let's do this. I had 3 weeks of vacation that I have to take. So I'm like, all right, my 1 week of vacation, this go around, I am going to WrestleMania. So made it happen, got the tickets, got the hotel. It was an easy flight. It was like an hour and a half, which makes things pretty simple. I don't like to sit on a plane too long. A couple weeks, I got to fly across the country out to Seattle for my sister's wedding. I guess I'll kind of bear with that for her wedding, you know. But, you know, ever since I touched down in Philadelphia and just leading up to the whole event, you could just kind of like feel a different buzz. The first day I got there was on a Monday, and I decided to go to the Flyers game that was going on because I kind of want to get the layout of the stadiums and where everything was going to be for the weekend, just to kind of, you know, familiarize myself to make it a little bit easier. That arena is beautiful, Wells Fargo Center. I guess they just did a remodel on it within the last few years, and it's so much nicer than the Rocket Mortgage one. I mean, Rocket Mortgage is nice, but Wells Fargo Center in Philly is really nice. They did a great job with the remodel. So much in the concourse, a lot of room to walk around, even in the upstairs as well. I had a great seat for the hockey game that I didn't have to pay too much for because I kind of bought it last second. I decided to go. That was really nice. WWE World at the convention center on Thursday, I think, besides the WrestleMania Night 1 and 2, was my favorite experience. They had so much there. And I went by myself, and I thought, like, how much time could I really spend here, right? How much time can I just kind of, you know, walk around a convention center by myself? And I think I spent 6 hours there, just roaming around all the different kind of stations that they had. Like, they had, I haven't sent you any pictures. I haven't posted any pictures yet, so I got like a ton of stuff to post. But they had the Firefly Funhouse like set there. You know, they had the live bump show that was going on. They had Cody Rhodes on the main stage talking. Later on, they had The Rock on the main stage, which was amazing. That little girl just absolutely owned him at one point. You know, they had Rhea Ripley at the tattoo center. She got a tattoo in front of everybody. So, you know, there was so much to do there. The WrestleMania store that they had was just massive. Like, it probably took up, I don't know, a fifth of the area, I think, that they had. Like, it was huge. And I did my best not to break the bank and spend too much money in there. But, you know, that whole experience was super cool at WWE World. I went to SmackDown on Friday night, which those tickets were only like $50. So we got to see SmackDown and the Hall of Fame ceremony. I stayed for Paul Heyman, and I stayed for a couple more after that, but didn't stay for the whole thing just because it was going to be pretty late and the next day was going to be crazy.
That's something they need to improve on. Like, and Undertaker said this too, like, the time of the Hall of Fame on a Friday night like that is just,
yeah. And it's tough, right? Because you got that, because they used to do NXT on Friday night before, mm-hmm. when they had, you know, before SmackDown moved to Friday nights, they would do the NXT pay-per-view. What's crazy is they did the NXT pay-per-view at like noon on Saturday. So those fans that went to SmackDown, NXT, WrestleMania Night 1 and 2, that's a lot. Mm-hmm. I did not go to NXT. I haven't watched it yet. I will at some point. But, yeah, I think they led with Paul Heyman first on purpose because of that. So they didn't have to have people sticking around all night just to see Paul Heyman. So I think that was a nice plan, but it was cool to see The Undertaker on Friday night as well as The Rock. But night one and two of WrestleMania, just unreal. I think my favorite match of the first night was the tag team ladder match with R-Truth and Miz winning. You know, I don't care about Austin Theory and Grayson Waller, but I think that match was really great. Obviously, seeing Rhea, I was glad to see that she retained. Unfortunately, she had to relinquish her title because of injury, but those things happen. And then night two, the main event. Well, first off, Sami Zayn night one as well, winning the Intercontinental title. Phenomenal. That was crazy. And then night two, those last 10 minutes of the main event might be the greatest 10 minutes of any wrestling ever produced in all of its history. Like, to have, and it was interesting because when it would just start off with Cody and Roman, you knew like there's going to be like multiple pieces to this.
Yes.
I did not know Cody was going to go full in Avengers mode and have everybody show up. But you know, when, you know, Jimmy came out, all right, you knew Jey Uso was going to come out. You saw Solo come out. Oh shit. Here's a great callback to John Cena and their program that they had over the summer. And then you saw The Rock come out to go face and face with Cena one more time. Like, and then to have the Shield music go off. And I'm like, is John Moxley actually here? Dean Ambrose? Like,
that would have been wild.
You should, I'll send you the video that I have. My camera is going all over the place because I couldn't find anybody. And then, you know, Seth kind of snuck in the ring there in his Shield gear. And then the place absolutely lost its collective mind when the gong hit for The Undertaker. Yeah. Like, I know a lot of people want a Stone Cold, but to hear that gong go off in person and to listen to the chaos that ensued from everybody around me, unreal. And then the final pop when Cody won was absolutely crazy as well. So, I mean, from top to bottom, both cards were really tremendous, and it was just a great show.
Yeah, I was so excited that you got to experience this. It's on my bucket list too. Hopefully, you know, in 6-7 years, the Browns have a dome stadium and Cleveland can host a WrestleMania. But it's in Minneapolis next year, and their stadium. Maybe that's something I need to take part in and experience, much like you did.
So I've already said this. They're going to do Las Vegas eventually.
Yes.
We should make that one happen because that's typically a pretty reasonable trip, airline wise and hotel wise. So I think that one could be pretty reasonable money wise.
We might have to do that. We could do the Dogland podcast from WrestleMania.
that would be so cool.
But as it twists this all together with, you know, being in Philly and the Eagles Stadium, and it pertains to the Browns, Anthony, how does Lincoln Financial Field compare to Cleveland Browns Stadium? Obviously, you're a season ticket holder with the Browns. You get to be in Lincoln Financial Field in different spots throughout the weekend because you didn't have the same seat for both nights of WrestleMania. How was getting in and out of the stadium? How did the stadium feel? How did it look compared to being a Browns season ticket holder having to be at Cleveland Browns Stadium throughout the year?
I will say this. I feel like the stadiums are pretty similar in terms of the layout and like the concourse and everything. I will say the one maybe not as nice part, and I didn't find it till night two, but night one, I hoofed it upstairs to the club level. There's like one escalator on the east side and the west side that go up. I didn't know that, but you know, Brown Stadium, you have one at each corner of the stadium, which makes it nice. And they're pretty well like noticeable. These ones I had to go searching for. I think it was by chance I found it the second night. So that made it a little bit difficult, but I guess I could use the exercise going up all those stairs. But, you know, it felt what I liked about Lincoln Financial is kind of similar to what I liked about the Wells Fargo Center, is that the concourse on the top floor was much larger, and there's more freedom to move around. And I think that's one of the big issues with Cleveland Browns Stadium is those upper levels. It gets really crammed and tight in there, especially when you factor in concession lines and all that kind of stuff. It makes it a little bit difficult. The seats I had both times were really nice. The first night I was actually in club level, so I had to like go up the stairs, go through the glass doors into the club area to get to my seats, which was nice because it was kind of chilly the first night. So there were a couple times where I went back down just to, you know, warm up a little bit. But you know, I could tell where I sat for night two that it doesn't seem like there would be a bad seat in there for a football game. I was kind of similar to where my season tickets are for the Browns, but you know, overall I would say, you know, the stadium is super nice.
That's nice. And because before we recorded, I was looking, the Link was built 4 years after Brown Stadium was, so there is some similarity in terms of how long the stadium's been around. I'm sure, I don't know if that's ever been renovated. I'm sure it has at some point in the last 20 years, but it's nice to know that the Browns are a little ahead in terms of, you know, escalators and, you know, accessibility and stuff. I agree with you about the concourse at Brown Stadium. It is a nightmare. The few times I've been up to that stadium, it's something that needs to be improved, but we know it kind of can't be. So it is what it is in that aspect.
The one thing that I will give Philadelphia massive credit on is that, and I had texted this in our group chat, mm-hmm. I could stand in the middle of the parking lot and throw a rock and hit Citizens Bank Park, the Link, and the Wells Fargo Center. Like, everything is right there. They have these massive parking lots in between everything. They have two train stations that are at the end of the block that you could walk to. They have a specific designated parking lot for Uber drivers, which is where I had to go after the shows, so I could get back to the hotel. So on that aspect, they are light years ahead of where Cleveland is in terms of, you know, just parking around the stadium. And I know, you know, they put Progressive Field and you know, Gund Arena when they built it, I guess the Jake, you know, kind of in the middle of everything. There's really no room for like the amount of parking that, you know, they have in Philly. But, you know, that's always going to be, I think, an issue with Cleveland is, you know, just the lack of parking space. And I guess where their stadiums are, it's in South Philly. So, I mean, it's away from downtown. They can get away with it. I feel like it's about the same distance as maybe a little bit closer than where Brook Park is compared to downtown. So, I mean, you know, just to kind of, you know, fuel that fire a little bit. Yeah, it's super nice. And I think the one other cool aspect of the stadiums is that I feel like this would be a great thing to build in between Progressive Field and the Q, is they had a massive sports bar complex. I think they call it the Xfinity Center, where you could kind of go in and like watch the sporting events that are going on. But they have it's almost like a mall, a mall food court kind of situation where they have all these different like food vendors in there, but they have like full bars as well. And it was just kind of cool. I went in there after I left the night two for a second, just to kind of check it out really quick. But it was a very cool thing. I'll have to show you more of it, but I feel like that's one thing that would make downtown pretty cool, because it's like a major sports bar themed area, and with all the different, you know, events that they could have going on at one time between hockey, football, basketball, and baseball, I think it makes for a pretty cool thing for, you know, that area.
Yeah, that would be something cool that they could have. Like, obviously, the Browns wouldn't have somewhat of a role in it just because their stadiums aren't connected to the other two, but having something there with the Guardians and the Cavs, like some kind of connection, like you said, with like sports bars, restaurants, and stuff like that, like connecting the stadiums together, I think that'd be a great experience for the fans.
Yeah, and you can, you know, even put like a sports book or something in it as well now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of cool ideas I think that they could do with it.
Yeah, for sure. But like, I'm glad you had a great time. Gives me hope and excitement and anticipation for what's coming to Northeast Ohio in August. Not as big as WrestleMania, but it's going to be a big show coming up later this summer with SummerSlam, and there's going to be 70,000 strong in Brown Stadium, and hopefully Northeast Ohio can bring it the way Philly did, because it picked up on TV. It didn't pick up as well on TV, but I know in the stadium, Anthony, I'm sure the crowd was really loud. And we know how loud Brown Stadium can get for football. I can only imagine what it's going to be like when SummerSlam comes in August.
Yeah, it's hard with open air
stadiums
because, you know, the you lose all the sound. You know, WrestleMania 30, like you talked about with Daniel Bryan, like that was loud just from all night long, you know, from that to the Undertaker losing the streak. That was a hell of a emotional night, mm-hmm. WrestleMania 30, but yeah, I think that, you know, the Brown Stadium gets pretty loud. We'll see how it is. Hopefully, you know, the Miz stays a face for the whole summer and can have like kind of his moment in Cleveland as a good guy for once. I think it's only happened like one time the entire time he's been in WWE that he's been in Cleveland as a good guy. So, you know, Johnny Gargano as well. So it'll be fun to have SummerSlam down in Cleveland Brown Stadium. And I hope they kind of do the convention thing for SummerSlam like they did for WrestleMania. If they do that, I really encourage people to go, because that is a massive family experience as well, from what I noticed from people walking around.
Yeah, I definitely feel like they will. They'll do some kind of thing at the convention center or something like that, because SmackDown's Friday night, SummerSlam's on Saturday night. So I feel like they got to have some kind of WWE world type thing like at the convention center, because it's all right there in downtown. So yeah, it'll be a great experience. I'm definitely looking forward to it. And hopefully to all our listeners, we did not bore you with wrestling/vacation talk here for the last couple minutes. But
you know what? If you're not down with that, I got two words for you. Go Browns. All right, let's do the podcast. The rest of the podcast. All right. So in terms of Browns news, I think the major thing that's kind of happened over the last couple of weeks is that Nick Chubb restructured his contract. Nope. Reworked his contract.
Sorry, Jack Duffin.
So the details on that, the Browns converted. You're going to have to correct me if I read this wrong. $12.2 million in cash to $2.275 million. That's the cash number. The cap number went from $15.7 million down to $6.27 million. And the money that he originally had in his contract can be re-earned through incentives based on his performance. So we don't know what those incentives are at the moment. I'm sure more details will come out down the road. But is this a sign that they're not as confident that he will be ready to go, at least for maybe the start of the season? And if he didn't agree to this, do you think that they would have just cut him?
It makes you wonder, because he gave up $10 million. Like, Jack, our buddy Jack Duffin, wrote an article on the OBR, and he said he took like it's close to $10 million, but like, Anthony, there's something going on. Like, if the Browns aren't confident he's going to be back like halfway through the season, like we don't know. Like, obviously, we know Andrew Berry and Jimmy Haslam said that he's been working his tail off at the facility, rehabbing. There was a picture of him walking in yesterday because OTA started this week. Didn't see like a brace, didn't see him on crutches or anything. We know he was going to start running at some point this month, but this is the second significant knee injury to Nick Chubb's the knee, because he had it, did it once in Georgia, did it again, obviously last year against Pittsburgh. But this is crazy. And Jack had said in his article, it said, this would lead me to believe that the injury will have a significant impact on his 2024 season. And for Nick and his agent to agree to this, you would think they had to have some kind of idea what he would get on the open market for a guy with two bad knee injuries to the same knee. And he's pushing age 30, or he's pretty close to it, I think. But yeah, this is crazy that he gave up $10 million in cash to stay with the Browns, which I think A, means he loves Cleveland and he loves his team so much. But yeah, this is big. This is pretty significant. I'm interested to see what the incentives are once those leak out. Cause they have, I would think, have to be somewhat significant to, for him to give up $10 million in order to stay with the team.
We feel like it might be like a per game active bonus, maybe the best way to put it. Cause I don't know if you could really, based on like the offense that they run, like, I don't know if I were his agent, you know, based on like rushing yards or anything, you know, maybe, you know, like kind of like a per game active bonus.
Yeah. I mean, according to Over the Cap, cause they wrote the details out, he got a, it's just, he has a roster bonus of $225,000, and he got the signing bonus of $925,000, with his base salary, which is the league minimum. So, I would imagine a per game roster bonus is there. I'm sure some kind of rushing yards and touchdowns incentives are in there as well, because I mean, and then it would have to be like, maybe if he makes the Pro Bowl, which if he's only playing half the season, outside of the fans voting him in the way they did Tyler Huntley for Baltimore, like, I don't see how he earns the full $10 million. Obviously, we don't know it yet, so that'll be interesting to see what they are. But yeah, it's crazy. Like, I don't recall another Browns player giving up this much money to stay with the team, because we had the Jarvis Landry situation a couple years back. I think Kirksey was in a scenario, which obviously we'll get to Christian Kirksey here in a few minutes, but yeah, I just don't remember a Browns player giving up double-digit millions to stay with the team. But I think Nick Chubb and his agent kind of knew, like, they were in a tough situation with the knee injury, with the uncertainty of the running back position, given some guys got some good deals in free agency. But yeah, with Nick pushing 30, coming off the knee injury, and you know his future up in the air, because we don't know what he's going to be like coming off the injury as well. So yeah, this is pretty crazy, but we don't have to worry about the scenario of the Browns cutting Nick Chubb, because that's not going to happen now.
So we're about 5 months away from week one, and 5 months from April 22nd will be exactly 1 year from which he suffered a knee injury. We think he'll be ready around that time, or we thinking more October, maybe early November?
I'm going with the latter option you gave. Nick Chubb is a freak. We all know this. We've seen the weightlifting videos. We've seen him, what he can do on the football field. Would it shock me if he was ready at week one? No, just because it is Nick Chubb. But with the severity of the injury and the long road, he had to come back. Obviously, he had to have multiple surgeries as well. I'm going to go with, we don't see him week one, but we see him around the midway point of the season, which, if we get him and he comes back and is the Nick Chubb of old, or even like 75% of the Nick Chubb of old, he's going to help this team down the stretch if we're in playoff contention.
Can I call my shot with his injury return? It'll be on a Thursday night football game about week six against the Pittsburgh Steelers.
All right.
At Cleveland Brown Stadium.
At Cleveland. Ooh, that night's going to be electric if that's the case.
I just like feel it. I feel like that might be a good return.
I love that.
All right. Anyway, maybe we could get Undertaker Gong before he comes out for his entrance. All right, enough wrestling, I swear. All right, so the Browns made a trade over the last couple weeks.
Last weekend. Yeah.
It's kind of when I was still kind of out of it. Yeah. Still recovering from my WrestleMania hangover, which I did not consume any alcohol at, so to believe that if you wish. They made a trade with the Tennessee Titans. They sent Leroy Watson out to Tennessee for pick 227. Now, you know, it's a move that kind of flies under radar, and I'm sure Bill Callahan had something to do with that because he was here with Watson last year. And I would imagine a lot of media members missed the chance to say, missed the chance to say Watson traded, but you know, the wrong Watson. But you know, pick 227 is not going to get you a whole lot in the draft. What it could get you is that a guaranteed choosing of somebody you might think is going to be one of the top undrafted guys at that position. But you know, they traded a depth offensive lineman for a seventh round pick is kind of the headline.
Yeah. I mean, we had 5 picks. Now we have 6 picks. So we have a little extra ammo to potentially, like, if we want to move up from 85 or move up from 156, you know, those scenarios, or move up from 54, potentially. If a guy starts slipping down the board, we have some extra draft capital to go and make a move, to move up a couple spots to secure a guy. But yeah, like Leroy Watson, we picked him up from the 49ers practice squad last year. He only played 55 snaps. Was very limited, but maybe, like you said, if Bill Callahan sees something in him, told the GM or the head coach down there, his son Brian, and was like, hey, can you go get this guy and take a chance on him? I think we can turn him into some O-line depth. And that's all he really was here. That might be all what he is there, but the Browns add another draft pick, which I love doing the mock drafts every day. Gives me a little ammo to go make a trade or just select another guy down on late in the draft that I, you know, would like to see the Browns bring in. So yeah, it was interesting. I think this kind of pencils potentially, Anthony, the Browns definitely taking an offensive tackle in the draft, because behind Wills and Conklin and Jones, there's not much there. James Hudson's in his last year. I don't think there's another tackle on this roster currently. So I think you can pencil in one of the draft picks next week and being an offensive tackle.
Yeah, I from what I've heard, you know, if you want an offensive lineman, this is your draft for it.
Yes.
So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if 2 of the top 3 Browns picks are offensive linemen. Just, you know, stock up because of the quality in this draft and, you know, where your roster currently stands with, you know, Jed Wills being on last year, his deal, you know, you... Presumably, this probably be it for Jack Conklin because you have DeJuan Jones behind him. But then, once Conklin's gone, you need somebody behind DeJuan Jones. So, you know, planning out a year ahead is always Andrew Berry's thing, at least a year. Yes. So, I think that you could place a safe bet on at least one offensive lineman tackle being drafted this year. So,
I would agree.
The Browns met with the media today for multiple reasons. So we'll talk about this one first. I saw that Denzel Ward talked, Deshaun Watson talked, but Kevin Stefanski talked as well. And he has some interesting comments about where they said philosophically they want a head. And he said that they need to have an attacking offense. So I would presumably what that means is they're going to throw the football a lot and
down the field too.
Yeah. Down the field. And I have heard the expression and I couldn't tell you where it comes from, but you throw to score, you run to win. Like I said, I can't remember who said that. But you know, in the NFL nowadays, you have to throw the football and be successful at it to score. Like, we all see what Pat Mahomes does. We all see what Josh Allen does. We've seen what Joe Burrow's done over the last couple of years. Like, you need to do a good job throwing the football. And if the Browns want to suffocate teams with their good defense that they have, you know, getting up by two scores at least, I think should be enough cushion most games. And hopefully an attacking offense is something that's in, you know, they're able to follow through with.
So I did look it up. The quote came from Ron Erhart, who was Bill Parcells' offensive coordinator during the 80s and 90s with the Giants and the Jets. So, I mean, we've seen the kind of quarterbacks that Parcells ran had in those times, Phil Sims, Vinny Testaverde, Drew Bledsoe was with him at some point. So those are guys that like to chuck the ball down the field. So that makes a lot of sense. And we kind of expected that with Ken Dorsey coming in. We were going to have more of a vertical game, more of a downfield passing attack. We know that's what the type of offense Deshaun Watson likes to run, going shotgun, having guys go down the field, what he did in Houston with, you know, DeAndre Hopkins, Will Fuller, et cetera, et cetera. We have the pieces here to do that. Amari Cooper has shown he can be that. Jerry Jeudy at times in Denver was able to show he can do that. But this is where, and they talk about, you know, the early phases of the workouts and the draft, like, do the Browns bring in another speed threat at wide receiver? Does Cedric Tillman take a step forward entering year two? David Bell, even though he hasn't been the most dynamic vertical threat between Purdue and early on in his NFL career. I think the tight end position is secure. They may add another one at some point in the draft. But they got Njoku, who is a vertical threat as well. But this is where you need those guys going down the field, guys that can rack up yards after catch. Elijah Moore is another guy entering his final year. This is his chance to shine. So we'll see what kind of offense they implement. That's also why I think they'll be patient, Anthony, with Nick Chubb coming back with the offense they're going to run, and because of the guys they added and already have in place in the running back room. So yeah, I'm excited. You know, we talked about this last year. We thought we were going to get more of an enhanced offense. At times we did see that with Watson, with Flacco. But yeah, with Dorsey in place, I think you finally have, and some of the other additions they made offensively, that, you know, Stefanski is going to be able to do what he wants to do. Now, obviously the elephant in the room is who's going to call plays. I still think it's going to be Stefanski, but if it is Dorsey, he's got a track record with a passing attack to put points on the board, be effective, be dynamic, whether it was Carolina or Buffalo. So I'm anxious to see what they implement. And as long as it's effective and the Browns put touchdowns on the board, I'm all for change.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest thing. You know, putting touchdowns on the board. Obviously, we hope with Deshaun Watson, things get a lot better in that aspect. You know, just kind of one follow-up, you know, because draft is right around the corner. If there's one guy around those first couple picks that they have that, you know, they would have a shot at to, you know, maybe help stretch the field, who you got?
Well, my hope is that Troy Franklin from Oregon, even though Alex is telling me he's not what I think he is, he's a guy that I've loved since last summer when I started diving into the 2024 prospects as a guy that I think can stretch the field, be that dynamic weapon at the wide receiver position. But realistically, and I think he could be there at 54, Malachi Corley, which we'll get to the mock draft, but that was my top pick last week on my mock on Dogs by Nature. He's a guy that's a tough, even though being a smaller receiver, he always goes up for contested catches. He can shake off defenders, but he does have some explosiveness to his game. The pro comp has been Deebo Samuel. You could see that slightly in his game as a receiver. He's one, and I'm trying to think, there is another receiver, but I know Corley and Franklin are like two of the guys that I would absolutely love to see in Cleveland for sure.
Or, you know, they could just trade for Tyreek Hill and you got the speed covered from there. You know,
yeah, why not?
You know, pick 227 that they got from Tennessee. Come on, Miami, let's do it. All right. So part of the press conferences that they had today were that Rashard Higgins and Christian Kirksey signed one-day contracts to retire both as Cleveland Browns. And it's great to have Hollywood back. It's great to have Kirko back, dog check and all, to retire as Cleveland Browns. So when you look at these two guys, Jack, do you have a favorite memory of these two?
Oh God. I mean, Kirksey, not so much, just because he was in, and he even acknowledged it. He goes, it was dark times when I played here. You know, he was part of the Johnny Manziel, Justin Gilbert draft class. Him and Batonio were the two bright spots out of that draft class. He was a good linebacker, but it was just on bad football teams. But he was such a inspiring leader, motivational guy, obviously dog check. We used to post that every Sunday morning before game day. And the GIF is still floating around there with Kirko saying dog check, but just a great leader on and off the field. Was Walter Payton Man of the Year. You know, it's nice to see him go out on a good note with, I think he was with Houston at the end of his career. So it's nice to see him be on a winner in a team that was rebuilding. Unfortunately, he couldn't be here. But then Higgins, you know, was part of that first Sashi Brown draft class, and he had to fight his way to get on the football field. But he had some nice moments in Baker's rookie year, in 2020, the playoff year. And we always kind of hoped he'd be that number three guy with OBJ and Landry. But, you know, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the red carpet walk. And he said today, he was like, well, OBJ brought the swagger. And he was like, I needed to bring the swagger too. And that's why I had the red carpet walk. And, you know, he was a good wide receiver for what he was during his time here. And it was nice to see guys come back and say they wanted to finish their career as Browns. I know there's a blabbering idiot in the local media that saying that it's signs of a bad organization, but Kirksey and Higgins were good players here during their time. Yes, Higgins was a third wide receiver. Yes, Kirksey was an average linebacker, but they were good football players during their time here. They helped the Browns win, or like Kirksey was helping the Browns win towards the end of his career, and then he ended up being a cap casualty, but Higgins was part of the turnaround. And that's what I look at with these guys. It's guys that loved Cleveland, embraced Cleveland, and those two were part of the turnaround here. And that's what I look back on, is guys that helped bring Cleveland back from the bottom of the league back into a playoff contender. Kirksey wasn't here for the playoff run, but he was a help building the culture up to get to that point. And then Higgins obviously had his impact on the Browns getting back to the playoffs in 2020.
You know, hopefully that guy keeps that same energy when guys sign one-day contracts to retire as Cubs players.
Yeah. So. Or any of the New York teams. Like, he's a New Yorker that wants to just shoot his mouth off, but he doesn't have a good take in his body.
The one play that sticks out for Hollywood is me is the game winner against Buffalo. That was my first year as a season ticket holder. And I remember that one. You know, Baker kind of rolling out to his right and then, you know, throwing across to the back of the end zone and hitting Hollywood there. So that's one that I'll always remember, was that game winning touchdown catch.
Yeah, and that was a tough year because we all expected him to like break out, and he only had four catches that year, Anthony, but one of them was a game-winning touchdown. And that was, you know, I know he had his rift with Freddie Kitchens, but the fact that a lot of people did. Yeah, I mean, and he had his issues with each coach, it felt like, Hugh, Freddie, and Stefanski, but at times he just went out there and let his play do the talking, and he had his moments for sure. Like 2020 had a good year, and 2021, we thought this will be the year he breaks out and, you know, becomes that legit number three receiver and gets a nice payday from the Browns. And he kind of fell off again in 21, which obviously was another roller coaster year with the OBJ situation, the unraveling of Baker Mayfield. But you know, Higgins was what he was. He wasn't the flashy superstar receiver, but when he got his chances, he was productive, and he was a solid number three, number four receiver in this league. And it was unfortunate things didn't work out after he left Cleveland. He had the stop in 2022 with Carolina, and that was it. But yeah, Higgins was at times a good player, but for being I think he was a sixth round pick in 2016, to have a 7-year career and score 12 touchdowns when probably nobody expected that, it's a good career in my book for him.
Well, it's great that both Hollywood and Kirko got to retire as Browns. So yeah. those are always two guys that I liked, and it's great to see these guys want to, like you mentioned, come back around and retire as Browns. Hopefully we get a lot more guys like that down the road. So let's bring this thing home and talk about your latest mock draft. And we'll go around kind of like we've done over the last few episodes, kind of look at each pick and, you know, give us your thoughts about him. You mentioned this guy a little bit earlier, but in round two, pick 54, you have the Browns taking Malachi Corley out of Western Kentucky.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to go offensive tackle here. And I mentioned in the article, Samartia from BYU. His first name's Kingsley, so we'll just call him Kingsley. And Patrick Paul went off the board, and I didn't want to reach. So I took Corley just because the wide receiver position being uneasy after this year still, with only Judy being the significant one under contract. I like I mentioned about Corley, he's a playmaker at this position. He's tough, can, you know, shake off defenders, go up for contested catchers despite only being 5'11". And he brings that explosiveness to the wide receiver room that this team's been lacking for some time. And I think he will be a much needed addition to the room if he was ultimately the pick.
Round three, you have the Browns taking an offensive tackle, as we kind of alluded to earlier. You really picked one to mess with the name. Hold on, let me give it a shot.
Okay.
Karan Amegaji?
Amegadije.
Okay.
Yep, but this guy, he's a unique prospect, Anthony, because if you look at one board, like if you go on PFF, he's a second round talent, but other boards have him as a third round talent. Last year he had a quad injury at the end, which I think if the quad injury doesn't happen, he's probably a day two pick, maybe sneaks in late round one. But the possibilities are there for him to be the future offensive tackle for this team. He could be a swing guy in his rookie year if he need be, because he has experience at right guard. But I would draft him and I would groom him to be Jed Will's replacement, because from what I've been able to see of this guy, the potential's there for him to be a future offensive tackle in this league, whether it's left or if they want to make the switch and put DeJuan at left and him at right. I think he's got the tools and the ability to be a future starting tackle in this league.
The downside is that when you draft these offensive linemen, you don't have Bill Callahan now. So
right,
it makes it a little bit more difficult.
It does, but Andy Dickerson has been in the league for a long time. He did a good job in Seattle. So, I mean, it's hard to replace a legend like Bill Callahan, but I think Dickerson can be a good coach in this league. We'll get to see it just because he's been primarily an assistant the majority of his career. He just became an offensive line coach. But we also don't know what type of scheme, A, the Browns offense is going to run, and B, what he likes to run. So it'll be interesting to see what tackle we draft here coming up and how he fits into what the future scheme is of the Browns offense.
In round five, you have the Browns going to tackle, but defensive tackle, Gabe Hall out of Baylor.
Yeah, second year in a row, we're taking a Baylor Bear. That was a defensive tackle, obviously, last year with Siaki Ika. Hall is an explosive athlete. He did force some pressure, at least 21 pressures in each of his years at Baylor. D-tackle is so weird because I feel like we need more. But then who are you bumping off if we do draft one or pick one up as a UDFA? You know, you would think Siaki Ika, Mo Hurst potentially, because there wasn't a lot of guaranteed money in his contract and him coming back to Cleveland. Tomlinson is safe. Shelby Harris is safe as far as I'm concerned. And Quentin Jefferson? I think that was the other guy we picked up. So if they did take a D-tackle here, which I would probably do one on day three just because I'm not – unless they're in love with one of the guys on day two, which there's a couple of good ones, but you take Hall here, plug him in, let him compete against Ika and even Mo Hurst, and, you know, competition will bring the best out of everybody in this situation. Gabe Hall's talented, but it's all about what do the Browns see in that position group right now.
And you could probably, you know, once you get into the fifth and sixth round, if they don't make the initial 53, you could probably get them on the practice squad. Especially for like the defensive tackle position, I feel like. So If they take one later in a draft, you know, that's another body they could have during camp, but you could probably get him on the practice squad.
Yep. That would be the hope, I think.
All right, round six, you have the Browns taking Willie Drew, a cornerback out of Virginia State.
Yeah, this is a guy that I've been looking at the last couple of weeks. Once I, you know, look with going through the draft prospects, seeing him, we know the Browns love corners. Andrew Berry loves corners. He's added one every draft cycle since he's been GM. Willie Drew was the only guy from an HBCU. He was one of two guys from HBCU schools invited to the combine, was at the Senior Bowl as well. He is a ball hawk, 11 picks in his last 2 years. He's a physical type of corner, which we've seen Andrew Berry likes that. You know, Martin Emerson a couple years ago, Denzel Ward, guys that are physical, aren't afraid to go tackle. You know, he is somebody that, you know, will sneak under the radar, obviously as a day three pick, but I think he's got the potential, much like a Cam Mitchell, to come in and make an impact right away on special teams. Maybe if he has to sneak in and play, he's got the size, he's got the physicality to where you're not going to expect him to be an impact guy year one, but with his coverage skills, with his physicality, who knows? Maybe if he has to get thrown in a situation, I don't think he'll be scared just because of the battles he's had to make his way to the league. And I think he's a guy that could be a sneaky, dark horse pick on day three for sure.
So I'll point out that you did this mock draft before the Browns made the trade. So there is no pick 227 on this one, but at pick 243 in the seventh round, you have the Browns taking Kendall Milton, a running back from Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, it's you're taking a flyer on a guy, and I think the Browns do add a running back again at some point in this draft, whether it's day two, if they love a Trey Benson or somebody, or wait till day three or even a UDFA. But I'll take a stab on Kendall Milton just because A, athletic freak, B, averaged over 6 yards a carry in Georgia, C, Georgia produces great backs. The only thing I don't like about him is his hands aren't the greatest. And I think in this offense that we expect with Dorsey, you're going to have some good hands coming out of the backfield. But he's a good runner, patient runner, good vision, tough to bring down. Kind of reminds me of another Georgia running back, not comparing the two, but just saying the traits are there. But yeah, at pick 243, take a stab on a running back, see what you got. I would love Frank Gore Jr., but he was already off the board, so I'll take my chances on Kendall Milton.
Yeah, if he turns out to be half the running back that we took out of Georgia last time, I think that'd be pretty darn good.
Yeah, no kidding.
But, you know, we'll see how it goes. Interested to see your next mock draft probably on Monday, right?
Yeah, they come out on Monday on Dogs by Nature. Once again, thank you, Jared Mueller, for the opportunity to do these mocks. And I post a mock, been posting a mock daily on X. So if you guys don't follow me, go do that. I post one usually in the morning, been using the different simulators daily. So trying to get a good sense of what is going to happen next week, but it's tough when we're at pick 54 and that's our first pick. It's kind of tough to see what's going to shake out in front of us.
You missed a golden opportunity. Where can they follow you on X?
Oh, of course. At Jack McCurry 08.
Thank you. All right. That saves half of my monologue as we get on out of here. So like I said, get on out of here. We'll be back later this week, next week, next week, to really dive into the draft a little bit more. And until then, be sure to follow Jack on Twitter at Jack McCurry 08, me at Anthony Jokey, JOKI. Be sure to follow the Dogland on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, all at the Dogland handle. Until then, we will talk to you next time. Remember always, go Browns.